One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, HYPERTHETICAL.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week are Sam Claiborne.
Hey, everybody.
Justin Davis.
Scoop.
And sitting in for Tina this week is Mark Medina, back on the show. We've been trying to get him on for a couple weeks now.
Yep.
He finally has time for us.
You know, I was like, I fit you in this time. You know, good to be here.
Oh boy.
Always a pleasure. We have a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about all the games that we know of that we're expecting in 2022, which now includes a very big one, maybe the biggest game in 2022. Mm-hmm. We're going to flip through the June 1998 issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly.
The classic.
But first,
yeah.
It's a really good era. But first, said big game that has now been delayed into 2022 is the God of War sequel, God of War Ragnarok, God of War 2, whatever it ends up being called. No longer expected this year, pushed back into 2022, and also confirmed that it's coming to PlayStation 4 in addition to PlayStation 5. And this has been a source of some, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but it's a source
consternation.
Consternation for some people out there, presumably people that are lucky enough to have a PlayStation 5.
Yeah. I mean, well, so first of all to all the gamers out there, this is the first of many games that are going to be delayed into 2022. I'm going to go ahead and call that now. You know, COVID has had this knock-on effect in game development for orchestras getting together and recording, you know, mocap sessions not happening. VO probably happened, but maybe not some of the rest of it. So, for big AAA or, you know, whatever you want to call it, quadruple A games, I am expecting more of them to move out of 2021.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They mentioned in the same breath that their big other story driven game Horizon is still on track for this year.
But they were like, maybe. That door open.
Asterisk. Yeah. And then for God of War, I think that it's also something we just haven't seen very much of. So maybe at least this year we'll see a bunch of cool gameplay of it and trailers and stuff like that, possibly for E3, which is, you know, something you would think we would see a lot of it at.
Well, yeah, of course, Sony isn't participating in E3, but there's nothing stopping Sony from having its own, you know, its own event adjacent to E3 anytime it wants.
Might as well show the big games.
Mark?
God of War was a predictable one because in that same blog post, he says like the hardest thing that they've had to do is like mocap and stuff like that. And God of War is basically a movie. So it's not really a big surprise. So something I want to get ahead of, because we've been seeing a lot of this on Podcast Beyond comment section, is a lot of people are saying, what? How were people surprised that God of War got delayed out of 2021? I don't think anyone's surprised, but it's still news. Like, yeah, they still said it was coming out in 2021, and it's not now. But I don't think I'm not surprised. I don't think anybody here is surprised that this happened.
I wouldn't say I'm surprised, but previously there was a big question mark as to when mm-hmm. I should expect to play the next mm-hmm. God of War, and now I know.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, not this year.
You know, it's the same song and dance as always, where we all love video games, you know, and it's a bummer. Like, I'm not going to get to play it as soon as I wanted. But ultimately, like, God of War was my favorite, well, tied for my favorite game of last generation. Like, I absolutely love it. I still think about it all the time. And so take all the time you need. Like, I would rather, much rather have them get it right. Mm-hmm. Then try to rush something out that they're not comfortable with can meet the quality bar that they want to.
I think the big real news here too is that it's coming out on PS4. I think that's fascinating. I think it's such an interesting, like, this would be the game. It's a tough choice to make, right? Because as they mentioned, there's like over 100 million people that own a PS4 and they don't want to cut them out, except for Ratchet and Clank and Returnal. And the, you know, it's a really interesting situation for them to be in. I don't think it's like discounting the success of the PS5 or anything like that, mm-hmm. but it's telling me also that this game was developed with, you know, the ability to put it on PS4. I don't think it'll be like a Cyberpunk, because I think it was made with the same, you know, probably engine that the first game used, because why not? Because look how amazing this game looks, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it'll, you know, be totally a viable PS4 game when it comes out, which is amazing. 2 years after the PS4 and our PS5 came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's a reflection of the success of the PS5, but I absolutely think this news is a response to them not being able to get the PS5 in as many people's hands as they want.
Yeah, like, it could be.
I don't think that God of War Ragnarok or Gran Turismo 7 come to the PS4 if the PS5 is not supply constrained and everyone has bought one that wants one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's funny to see news stories still in June where they're saying, like, hey, the shortage is going to get worse than it get before it gets better. You would think that by now we'd start seeing them. And, you know, Gran Turismo is also a really funny one, because there are screenshots of when that game was revealed where it mm-hmm. said on the screen, exclusive to PlayStation 5. So it was kind of funny that it was like, for, you know, they were pretty upfront about Horizon and Miles Morales. Now we know about God of War, but Gran Turismo is one that actually walked back, where they're like, okay, this actually isn't exclusive anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I don't know enough about game development to really say. Like, there's certainly a through line of discussion of, well, they're going to have to hold their game back now, right? Like, they can't do all the crazy stuff that they wanted to do when it came to next gen. But, like, the thing about racing games and a character action game like God of War is they can push, like, they're not – it's – how many character models are on screen at once? Like, you can make a photorealistic car and, like, you know, Kratos, like, it's the difference between a game running at 1080p and a game running at 4K. Like, that's the primary difference between the PS4 and the PS5. Like, I don't think the rest of the game is going to look that different at all. It's just about how many pixels are going to be pushed on the screen.
Yeah, it was always about, like, you know, a lot of people said Tom Marks wrote an article, very famous article, about how, like, the next leap in the next gen is not going to be all about graphics. It's going to be about things like loading time and stuff like that. So when you think of the biggest things for Horizon Zero Dawn is that the loading times were incredibly long and that the game ran at 30 FPS. And mm-hmm. they've already, like, clarified that the game's going to have a fidelity mode and a performance mode, and that it's basically not going to have load screens. The PS4 version is not going to have those things. It's going to run at 30 FPS and it's going to have load screens, more than likely. That's the generational difference.
I completely agree.
I guess I'm of two minds in when it comes to the cross-generational aspect of, like, God of War, because, like, you know, obviously everyone who doesn't have a PS5 yet, this is good news for them. And obviously it makes sense for Sony as a business who sold 110 million PS4s. But I also understand the concern that since it has to also run on PS4, maybe it won't be, you know, just as absolutely big and as graphically impressive as it possibly could be if they were just focusing on that one platform. Like, sure. I understand that concern too.
That's a worry. I mean, especially if it's like, oh, you know, it's clearly an easier game to put on PS4, or else Ratchet would be, you know, like it can't all be business. It has to be a development decision, right? And I think that that's a testament to the strength of this development team, is one way to put it. And the other is that, yeah, like we're not getting a brand new God of War engine. Does that matter? Probably not. Like, this game looks incredible.
I think,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think the only part that like, gives me pause is something that you touched on earlier, Mark, which is, you know, God of War was a one take game. Like, it didn't have loading times.
There are no loading screens.
And so, you know, obviously some of that's faked with the, I forget the name of it, but like that inter-realm area that you go through. But like, you know, that's the part where I'm like thinking about some of what the PS5 could pull off that the PS4 might struggle with, where I'm like, ooh, I don't know about that. But like, I'm not worried about like the core moment to moment action. Like it'll be a difference in frame rate and it'll be a difference in resolution.
Yeah. With Horizon, I you know, there was a whole lot of talk before where it was like something like Cyberpunk, where it's like, drop the old versions because now those, you know, that it's being made for those versions. And I maybe it was just me hoping and people hoping, but I could have swore that Horizon Forbidden West, I think we're all under the impression that the game was built for PS5 and being downgraded down to PS4. But in the Game Informer article that came out today, they very clearly say that the game is built for PlayStation 4 from the ground up. It runs great on that system and then is being upgraded to PlayStation 5. Mm-hmm. Me not being the biggest, I'm bigger on frame rate than I am for graphics. The game looks amazing on PlayStation 5. That's the gameplay we've seen. If that's what the game looks like, I think it looks totally fine to me. I'm happy with it.
I mean, maybe.
You know, it's good.
Oh, go ahead.
I was thinking about the business side of this as like, you know, since they mentioned their install base, and consoles exist to sell software, right? Like, we know that. That's the reason you have a console is so you can sell a lot more software than consoles. And that's where Sony is going to make their money. But there's pressure to make new consoles because other people make them, and people will stop wanting to play the older consoles eventually. But there's this in-between region where it's like, yeah, it totally makes sense to like keep on putting out games for, you know, 100 million install base. That's always been that way. Like, people put out Atari games until, you know, 1989, like legit ones, like in the box, for because there's just so many Ataris out there and somebody bought them. Like, weird games like Double Dragon got a port to Atari, you know. And of course, every generation, seemingly Nintendo has a Zelda game that spans the generations, and they know, they're like, oh, this is a really good time to put out games on two systems. It's they always do it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't know. I keep coming back to the idea that, like, if Sony could make and sell as many PlayStation 5s as they wanted, I don't think this happens.
Sell, yeah.
Like, you know, if this was a PS5 exclusive and there's PS5s abundant on store shelves, like, what a win and a boon. Like, that's what these big, you know, quadruple A, like, twice a year games are all about, is, like, you know, software sells hardware. So it's like, man, I think this comes back to them sort of looking at this like they really openly, they're like, dude, the PS5 is going to be scarce all the way through 2022. Like, you know, they're signaling that now to level set people's expectations. Like, it sucks. It's not Sony's fault. It's just a knock-on effect.
Do you think we'll see Ratchet and Returnal ports downwards to the PS4? I mean, that would be the logical. That would be the logical thing to do.
Right? People would be so upset.
I can't imagine with Ratchet specifically what we've seen of that game. I can't imagine that can run. I don't think it's designed to run on anything but something with a super high fast SSD.
Returnal, well, I hope God of War looks that way.
Yeah, Returnal.
Returnal might be more likely, but I say that as Sony's not a game developer. But you know,
just, yeah, I think Housemarque, the game is very pretty. So I think the fear that game wouldn't be able to run at a crisp 60 FPS, Housemarque could just be like, nope. I want Housemarque to put Returnal on PC though. So, you know.
Yeah, that could happen. I just thought this quote from Herman Holst, who's head of PlayStation Studios, was odd. He says, cross-generation for God of War, he says, you can't build a community of over 110 million PS4 owners and then just walk away from it, right? I think that'd be bad news for fans of PS4 and, frankly, not very good business. Sure, except that that's normally how the video game business works in its entire history. You build a community of however many users and then you walk away from them with your next console.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's acting like his answer is kind of like, duh, but like, That's not how it has worked for most of video games' life.
That's respectfully, that's kind of a baloney quote. Like, yeah, they walked away from the PS1 community.
Like, and the PS3. Know, like, Killzone Shadowfall and Infamous Second Son weren't also playable on PS3.
Yeah.
In any case, both PS4 and PlayStation 5 owners will be able to play God of War 2 in 2022, and that's as good a time as any to revisit the release calendar for 2022, which is not it's not a very long release calendar that we have yet, but there's some notable ones here. There are two games. Did you know there are two games that have release dates in 2022? And one of them is a Pokemon game. Pokemon Legends.
Oh, that's right.
Arceus. I don't know how it's pronounced. Arceus. That one's Arceus. Out January 28th.
Wow. Okay. Isn't it just Arceus? No?
Arceus? I have no idea. But that makes a lot of sense, Mark, and you're probably right.
I'm not a Pokemon fan, so I don't know.
That's like the big open world, you know, like Skyrim-y Pokemon game, right?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, look at it. Like, it looked a little bit rough around the edges when they showed it off, but, like, you know, this is, if they get it right, this is like the Pokemon game that people have been sort of clamoring for forever, for decades. Like, they want a big, like, open world, go everywhere, explore everything, you know, Pokemon game. Throwing them, what are they called, fluff apples or whatever.
It is funny that it has a date, though.
Yeah, January 28th.
Yeah.
First game you can look forward to, as of right now, playing in 2022. And the other game that has a release date is something I had never heard of before, Shibito Magure. It's March 24th, and I think it has a worldwide release date, and I don't know what it is.
Tell me more.
Shibito Magure. Please be excited for that. But games coming 2022, along with God of War that we know of, as of right now, they might get delayed. Forspoken. Does anyone remember Forspoken from Square Enix?
Oh yeah.
Is that a Medina game?
Yeah, you know, I love Square Enix. That game looks incredible. Like, her just like kicking up around the mountains. I love the movement. I love how that game looks. It looks gorgeous. We don't know a lot about it. So, like, you know, got big old Square Enix monsters, big old Final Fantasy looking monsters. I'm super in. Yeah, the game looks awesome.
Post-apocalyptic, cool traversal giant monsters. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was going to jog my memory. I'm like, that's the one with the crazy cool character movement, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we've only seen like a kind of teaser for that. So having a 2022 release date, knowing everything we know about all these other games, seems
that's
really close.
That's Project Athia, right? I'm not misremembering
correctly. So.
Yeah. And I think that's what it was, yeah.
Square Enix is participating in E3, so it's possible we could learn more about Forspoken very soon. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers has two games, Gotham Knights and Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
I'm so excited for both of them.
What are the odds that they're both out in 2022? Yeah.
It's clear. I guess I shouldn't say it's clear. Like, my assumption is that one of them was intended to come out this fall, you know, and is now not. But, man, like, I think Gotham Knights is a surprise for me. Like, I was expecting that. That's sort of the you know, B studio. It's not the big Rocksteady game that people have been looking forward to forever. But, like, I was really, really taken with what they showed off. And I think, you know, E3 or what they showed off last summer, the four playable characters, how they're really, really leaning into it being basically like a full-on RPG at this point. I think it looks great. It's one of my most anticipated games. Obviously Suicide Squad, I think, is going to be amazing too, but it was only shown off in a lot more of like a teasery state. So,
I would expect Gotham Knights first. I misspoke. Warner Brothers actually has three games. There's also Hogwarts Legacy.
Oh, right.
Oh yeah.
Another thing we haven't seen a lot of.
They got some bangers coming out.
That stuff was shown at their new streaming event, DC Fandom, last year.
That's right.
And I wonder if they'll have another one of those with potentially that and the Harry Potter stuff. That would be like a pretty cool summer showcase for them if they had it. But no games to play this fall, which sucks.
Well, we have got Far Cry 6.
No, I mean from Warner Brothers.
Oh, from Warner Brothers,
gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Warner Brothers is participating in E3, so we could get some news from them soon. The aforementioned Gran Turismo 7 is due out 2022, both PS4 and PS5. Then Lord of the Rings Gollum.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah.
Is something that's relevant to many of our interests. Mm-hmm. Game could be good. I don't know.
It could be. Yep. I'm surprised it's projected for 2022 still, because we've been hearing about it for a lot longer, some of these other games.
Yeah, that's what we're about to see right here. This is why you're playing as Gollum, and it's more of a stealth adventure game.
Gollum?
What was that?
I think if my memory is correct, I think that might have been like the first next gen game, like a couple years ago or whenever. Yeah. Like, and so not that it doesn't look good or cool or isn't worth like people's interest in it, but I think it sort of punched above its weight by just like making splashy headlines for being like, yeah, we're coming to PS5 and Xbox Series X. I think it was even before the Series X had a name. Yeah.
I mean, I can't wait to see like what they just showed there, like any type of renderings of Middle Earth that are, you know, loosely based on Peter Jackson or not. Like, I'm just always excited to see that stuff. And like that, like Mordor stuff, I think he was in, like, I couldn't tell if that was Barad-dûr or like a weird place like Durthang or like, you know, Cir Thingol. Like, those are all really fun because they come from a unified description in the books, and some of them have very thin descriptions, and I like seeing how people fill those out and exploring them. That would be the reason to play that game.
You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. And then Nintendo will be at E3, and I had completely forgotten that they have announced Splatoon 3.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I'm not a Splatoon boy, but like the trailer for 3 was really cool. And I remember talking about it on Scoop. Like, Splatoon has always had like deeper lore than people gave it credit for. Like, that these squids, what's that category of animal called that like doesn't have a spine?
Yeah, cephalopods?
Yeah, like cephalopods. Cephalopods. Like, it's post-apocalyptic where like cephalopods are now have like taken over and become like the dominant thing on the earth. And like that lore has always been there. But now Splatoon 3 is like seems to be really, really leaning into it. Like the trailer has like, you know, wrecked landmarks and stuff like that. So I think it's actually a pretty cool direction to take that series.
Maybe it's the same universe as Pikmin.
Oh, the Nintendo Cinematic Universe.
And then another one from Square Enix that I'm very excited for is Project Triangle Strategy. Codename Project Triangle Strategy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I love the name.
I think those are the big ones that have at least been announced for a 2022 release window. There's other things, of course, like Starfield, which we kind of expect to come in 2022, but it hasn't been announced for that yet. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
If we see Starfield next weekend, I will die. And I think we're going
to
see
it. But then you won't get to play it.
I know. That's the line I walk, is getting so excited for a game announcement that I literally die before the game comes out.
Yeah, we were talking about that on Scoop maybe last week or 2 weeks ago when you so rudely declined to join,
Mark. That's right. Yep.
And like, you know, Skyrim has become such a meme at this point. And like, you know, Fallout 76 and Elder Scrolls Blades, like Bethesda's had a few stumbles, that it's like, it's easy to forget that like this is the thing, like the next big AAA thing from that studio. Yeah. Where, you know, I couldn't be more excited. And I'm playing through Mass Effect right now, and I'm so ready for like another big take on like, you know, deep sci-fi lore and planetary exploration and all of that. Like, we don't actually get that kind of video game that often.
Yeah, I love it so much that Todd Howard's like, there's so many people excited for a game that nobody's seen. And I'm like, I don't care. I've seen enough. I want to play it. Plus it keeps getting leaked. So it's just like, I just can't wait for them to just like show something.
I don't know if there's actually been leaks. Like,
oh yeah, there's been hella leaks.
For like, any like gameplay footage or any details?
Yeah, it's like gameplay footage, but it's from a build that was from like 2018. Oh. So like, they're like, they have confirmed, yeah, that's the game, but like what you're saying is not accurate. So
Bethesda did the right thing where they were like, yeah, it's real, but it's really old. Like, you know, stay tuned. So that's the right way to handle that, I think.
Well, please be excited. Fall 2022, God of War 2 on PlayStation, Starfield on Xbox, and Breath of the Wild 2 on Nintendo Switch Pro.
You think Breath of the Wild 2 is 2022? So many people think it's coming this year.
I mean,
you just slipped that one in there, Damon. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah.
Again, that's just another one that hasn't been pinned down to any sort of release window.
Nintendo and Pokemon Company gave, you know, their Pokemon game release date, but Breath of the Wild is totally, totally unknown.
I certainly hope. I would love to play it sooner than later, but
I mean, I'm assuming it'll launch with, you know, the long rumored Nintendo Switch Pro with you know, forward compatible options or whatever you want to call it. Like, it'll be another game, another sort of Zelda game that spans generations, as you pointed out earlier.
Right now we're living in a world where new Nintendo Switch or Nintendo Switch Pro is just trending every day on Twitter, because people think that they think that the Nintendo conference next Tuesday or Tuesday after next Tuesday is going to be Switch Pro games, and that they have to release this Nintendo Switch Pro, or, you know, release the announcement for it before that. So it's just like every single day, every.
That's such a weird series of assumptions.
I know.
And there's no historical basis. Like,
like actual certainty, but it just, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like when something trends this hard and there's so many like leaks and thoughts about it, and like store listings are showing up, I don't know, you just start to believe it's true.
It's really funny to me that Nintendo went out of their way, I don't have the exact verbiage in front of me, but they're like, join us for 45 minutes of exclusively software reveals. They went out of their way to say they're not talking about hardware, but that just fueled the fire more. It's like, then it was exactly what Mark said, like, they must be showing it off before then.
They announced they denied Switch Lite's existence until the day they revealed it. So, you know, who knows?
Okay, we can leave it at that. I think it's real. Like, I believe it's.
I think it's real as well. Yeah,
you believe it's coming before E3? The announcement.
We're running out of days for it to be before E3. It's one of those things where it becomes this conspiracy theory of whenever the prediction doesn't come to pass, that just builds on the lore of like, oh, I know we said it was going to be June 2nd, but actually now there's signals that maybe it'll be June 4th. So
that's conspiracy theories.
But we do live in a world where, like, in between us recording this and it going live, like, it could absolutely happen overnight. It could happen any time.
Something very similar happened with Next Gen Console Watch this week. And that brings us to the June 1998 issue of Electronic Gaming Monthly with Turok 2 here on the cover. A game I think I only played with you, Sam, in our office like last year.
That's right.
Or 2 years ago now.
Yeah. That's right. We ran around a very empty sewer.
Yeah. It's notable for having a cool opening. The logo for the developer Iguana. It's a pretty good little sequence in the game.
Why were we playing that?
Why were we playing that? I think we just found a bunch of N64 games.
Yeah.
And it was a Friday.
Didn't need a reason, man.
Remember when I found the Game Shark and figured out how to add the Star Fox R-Wing to Ocarina, and I had to put in games like Turok or GoldenEye to like get that to work or to reset the Game Shark?
That was a good day.
That was incredible.
Anyway, we go to the letter of the month. Now, remember, this is June, so coming not too long after the April issue. Alex wrote in to say, an avid reader of your magazine and subscriber since the beginning. I never thought I'd be writing one of those letters with some insidious gripe towards your hard work, but you have now gone too far. Picture a faceless EGM reader who reads of a video game based on the film GoldenEye. Pictures within show images of all five Bonds, Lazenby, Dalton, Moore, Brosnan, and Sean Connery. An avid fan of the Bond series and exuberant at the possibility of pitting Connery, God among men, against Pierce Brosnan, his young protege, I, needless to say, was quite let down when it was revealed they would not be included due to copyright reasons. All lawyers must die. Look, lawyers aren't the ones that decide that. Anyway, right. 6 months later, a tired man staggers home from work and finds a golden ray of hope, his EGM in the mailbox. The wrapper is opened. The excitement builds. He thumbs through the mag, reading through various articles, and is most satisfied. As he reaches the tricks of the trade section, he glances at something long since forgotten, the missing Bonds and a method to release them from their legal prisons. Joy overcomes, tears flood his eyes, and he immediately calls as many people as would be interested, one. But then glancing to the cover, his dreams are crushed. April 1998. Visions of Shang Long flood to his brain, and he knows the horrible, horrible truth. His head gets light, his mind goes blank, and then yes, he commits the ultimate sin. He purchases another mag to corroborate, one with a title that rhymes with Tame Ho. But alas, it's too late. The damage has been done. His heart crushed. Of course, this would have been an April Fool's Day joke.
Yeah. Although GoldenEye really did have a bunch of like secret codes and stuff that would be unveiled years later.
I was unaware of Bondgate and that there was missing Bonds from that game. It sounds like it was something that was maybe in these EGM issues of this era that I just didn't follow.
Yeah. Not everyone had as good was good a sport about it. Rex Liu wrote in to say, I hate your weak magazine. I'm switching to Game Fan. You guys printed the wrong cheat for GoldenEye 007. You guys got all my hopes up and the code didn't work. You guys are a bunch of pathetic, incompetent ball suckers.
You guys are so stupid.
You probably didn't even know what incompetent means, and he misspelled incompetent twice.
Well, hey, good on them for printing that letter.
Yeah, I have to say, I'm not surprised by this comment at all because
I know
some things never change.
gotta see them every day still.
Mark, this is from a time before comments. These are actually missives on paper. Epistolary comments.
Now they get to just tag me directly on Twitter and tell me what kind of a failure I am.
When it was just mail, you could just throw it away.
Right? Now it's there forever, and I just block them.
And you knew it would be a good letter if it had mail envelope art.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
So the question of the moment, this issue was, don't you hate it when? And people were prompted to write in. A lot of them have at AOL email addresses. Write in with their answer to don't you hate it when? Don't you hate it when you're in a heated GoldenEye battle and you blow yourself to bits with a remote mine?
Yeah.
Don't you hate it when in an old NES battery backup games you forget to hold reset before turning it off?
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't that widely known, too. I think that's funny.
I know.
Hmm.
Don't you hate it when you packed 48 hours into Final Fantasy VII only to find the next morning that your dumbass excuse for a nephew has deleted your game from the memory card to make room for a Resident Evil 2 save?
That's a rookie mistake. When you're playing a Final Fantasy game that long, everyone knows you save, you R2, you save again, you R2, you save. Come on now.
But like, the memory cards back then, like it was crazy. Like the memory card would have 15 blocks on it. Yeah, they were doing, that's what they were called. And then some games would take up like two or three blocks to save your game.
Yep. On GameCube, like Super Smash Brothers was like 49 out of 50 blocks. And I was like, okay, well, I guess this is my Smash save now.
Yeah,
and they're expensive. The cards are like 30 or 40 bucks. You know,
when you go,
ever be able to get away with that anymore?
Yeah, I don't know if that was sarcasm, but when you go to save on a Final Fantasy game, it's like it shows 99 slots, but like, they don't really tell you that. Yeah, every time you save, it's taking up more and more memory. You can't actually use them all.
They had a feature. It slices and dices. Sega focuses on Katana. Put Saturn in the closet. But actually, if you dig into the text, they don't really have any information about the Katana, the Dreamcast, codenamed Katana. They have a lot of information on the final batch of games that were coming from the Saturn. And then, so this is June 98. They were hoping the Katana / Dreamcast would be revealed at the Tokyo Game Show later this year. Last year. I just want to remind everyone that the Katana is a much cooler name than Dreamcast.
Yeah, certainly is. There was an E3 that year too. Is that not? I know it wouldn't be mentioned this issue because this issue was written in April, right?
Yeah. I mean, so E3 would have been in May, I think.
That console would be out the next year. The Dreamcast would be.
Oh, I mean, yeah. They even mentioned that somewhere. They mentioned they're targeting September 1999.
Wow, accurate.
Yeah, but Sega told us the September 1999 release date is the plan for the U.S. launch. But they didn't mention 9999.
Yeah.
Sega too franchise clever. Most wanted on Katana, number one, Sonic the Hedgehog, followed by Virtua Fighter, Virtua Cop, Daytona, Alex Kidd, and finally Sega Rally.
Wow.
I mean, that shows you just like seeing things in 3D was really cool back then.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I miss Virtua Cop.
It's an on-rail shooter, right?
Yeah, although as those words are coming out of my mouth, I'm like, maybe like it being a shooter is not great for like, you need to be shooting zombies or something.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it was kind of like a trainer, right? It had like little mini games and you'd move on. Like, wasn't that?
I don't know.
I only know it from arcades and I always walk past it being like, who'd want to play that game? But there's always people playing it. Light guns.
Yeah. News tidbits. PlayStation soars to 10 million. Sony announced April 2nd they have sold 10 million PlayStations in North America since the system's September 1995 launch. I don't know. 10 million systems sold in 3 years wouldn't be that impressive today. Mm-hmm. So I guess that just shows you how different it is.
Yeah. All those sales figures are always so fascinating. We're like, we all know that video games have grown and become this big dominant, entertainment medium. But like, once you see like an apples to apples comparison, we're like, it soared to 10 million units sold in 3 years. It's like, dude, that wouldn't even be a blip anymore.
Yeah. Resident Evil 2 scores. Capcom announced that in only 6 weeks, the company had sold an unprecedented 3 million units of Resident Evil 2 worldwide, with more than 1 million in the US and 1.9 million in Japan. I wonder if it would go on to outsell, if the North American market would go on to outsell the Japanese market for Resident Evil 2. Also, did you notice, I guess they actually cut up a Sega Saturn controller here to make it look like it had been sliced by a katana?
Oh, it's got to be. Oh. It's got to be something they did in editing, photo editing software.
I don't know. It's 1998. Acclaim Entertainment picks up the license to Comedy Central's South Park.
Yeah, that resulted in a pretty poor series of Nintendo 64 and PlayStation games.
Yep. I was going to say, before the Stick of Truth, were there any good South Park games?
No.
There was a racing game that people played. And
I played the first-person shooter one on N64. I think it's just called South Park. And then South Park Chef's Love Shack, which was just like a game show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember either of them being very good.
This is a two-page ad for Hot Shots Golf, and I just thought it was just an odd choice for what they went with. The scene is a parking lot of a golf course, and there's a lot of fancy black cars, but one car looks less nice and is yellow, and it just says, it's golf for anybody.
Oh. So it's a message like, hey, if you suck and you're poor, this is your golf game.
Poor people can play too. Yeah.
Maybe they're saying that's like a cool hip car.
Because
it's not like a banged up wooden station wagon or something.
Well,
very strange.
Well, anyway. The one on the left, that's a Porsche, the other ones are black, so they're automatically cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're saying, that one kind of looks like...
you got a Volkswagen and a BMW in there.
Hotshots Golf does rule, to be fair.
And they've got a quote from ESPN that says, the graphics are so vivid, it's like watching golf on TV. Well, no, the whole thing is that it's kind of a cartoon.
That stuff is never going to get old. And I know we're still falling into that trap now of like, the graphics are eye popping. Like, and in 20 years, it's going to sound stupid. But like,
it's so funny that they would even claim that, though, when the game is like supposed to be kind of cartoony.
My favorite one is, for 30 years now, it's been like the graphics look like Toy Story. That's what video game graphics have been compared to.
Yep.
And I don't know how long it's been since you watched the original Toy Story, but video game graphics have long surpassed the original Toy Story.
Does it look like that MTV video? Was that
what the Dire Straits the one?
Yeah, the Dire Straits video. That Weird Al parodied.
Yeah, it's not quite that bad.
I'll remember forever opening a magazine in 1999, 2000, and seeing the like all the main characters from Final Fantasy X, and being like, "That's it. This is the peak. They look like real people. Mm-hmm. It'll never look better."
The Quarterman, gaming gossip and speculation, says by the time you read this, Squaresoft should have made an official announcement concerning its future publishing intentions, with Einhander being the last Square game to be published by SEEA, Sony. It's thought that all further games, including Parasite Eve and Brave Fencer Musashi, will be published by Square itself. Brave Fencer Musashi was the 20 Questions game last week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and what? I missed a Brave Fencer Musashi 20 Questions.
Yeah, you did.
We needed you.
Stupid Horizon Forbidden West reveal.
We had no chance.
Oh, I love that game.
And actually, Square would enter an agreement with EA so that EA would publish its games for a while in North America. So I believe at least Brave Fencer was published by EA.
Okay.
And then following from the Q's revelations last month concerning a Tomb Raider-style game featuring Indiana Jones coming from LucasArts, the EGM Spy Network has heard distant rumblings that something even more exciting may be on the horizon. Do the words Episode 1 mean anything to anyone?
Oh.
What, did they make a game based on Episode 1? Yeah, they made 100 of them.
Hype.
And then this is a good one. Nintendo and Rare have apparently been in negotiations over forthcoming James Bond related titles. Having failed to get their hands on Tomorrow Never Dies, who knows how that happened, they are now locked in meetings regarding the next Bond movie due 1999. In the meantime, though, we can expect to see a licenseless spy shooter at E3 in May, which makes use of Rare's second generation GoldenEye engine, which of course would be Perfect Dark.
Perfect Dark.
Well done.
Yeah, great rumor.
Nintendo adds color.
Great game.
Great game. Nintendo's Game Boy is about to get a much-needed boost. That's right. Nintendo of America has officially announced that it will release the Color Game Boy, a color version of their popular handheld system, in the U.S. in late summer.
I love that clear Game Boy case so much.
Yep.
And if you recall, Damon, I've been trying to source a version of a TV that's that for office use, which I think is really funny. And I found out those only exist because of prisons.
I remember we talked about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. Like a clear CRT television.
Smuggle anything in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the Game Boy I had growing up, was a clear one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice. Wow. I had a phone like that.
Yeah. I still have it. It's somewhere. But the coils where the battery is, one of them's broke. And so I used to have to shove tinfoil. I don't think it works anymore, though.
Oh.
Although,
it's a good solution.
When I think about those translucent TVs, I think you could stick a weapon in there and I would be none the wiser.
You would just have no idea. You'd be like, yeah, exactly.
TVs are built with swords, guys. Come on.
Oh, is that the color blade?
Is what now? Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of, Sam, they released a clear Saturn. They called the Skeleton Saturn.
Mr. Bones.
Mr. Bones.
Man, that is so, so cool.
I think it's really cool. I've never seen that one before. I don't think it was released outside of Japan. Mm-hmm. But then there's a report on the Tokyo Game Show. There's nothing really interesting in their updates, but I want to point out there's a photo from Gamist staff. Gamist is a Japanese game magazine, at least it was. Mm-hmm. And this is some sort of a promotional thing from the show, and it says Gamist staff, the future kick your ass.
It sure does.
I love it. Yeah, dude, they were right.
The future kick your ass.
Been not great over the last 18 months or so.
This is interesting. It's an ad for Messiah, the game Messiah, which, remember, this is 1998. I don't believe that game would be released until 2000.
Ooh.
I've never heard of this game.
It's from Shiny, makers of Earthworm Jim. Lots of praise from a lot of gaming magazines here. Next Generation said one of the deepest, most involving, and most cleverly designed games ever released on PlayStation. I think IGN gave it a 7.5 when it eventually came out. And wait a minute. I think I have mixed up, or something happened. Two ads have been mixed up here. This is an ad for Messiah. This is for Abe's Odyssey.
I was looking at those screenshots. Yeah. I'm like, that's 100% just Abe's Odyssey.
So these quotes are for Abe's Odyssey, but I don't know where the rest of the ad for Messiah is. Unless this is it. Maybe this is like viral marketing in 98. just Messiah and a weird logo, and then it would be out 2 years later.
I thought it was like a doll head, and the critics were losing their heads or attached to that.
I think it's like a cherub angel.
Yeah. This is very confusing.
I remember that game now. I'd forgotten about it till you just said that, Damon. You played as a little cherub floating around.
Ad for Quest 64, which Nintendo Power said will set the standard for 3D epics, and EGM said incredibly sweet graphics. I don't think the eventual release qualifies as incredibly sweet graphics. Mission Impossible coming summer 1998, and they also have a little preview of it. Thought by the time the Mission Impossible game finally came to the Nintendo 64, Tom Cruise would be old, senile, and in a wheelchair.
What?
What if we could? What if we told them that in 2021,
still
Mission Impossible sequels would still be going strong, probably better than ever, and Tom Cruise would still be doing his own stunts.
Mission Impossible Fallout, man, that movie's amazing. I love that movie. And I'm not even a huge Mission Impossible fan, and I watched it. I was like, man, this movie's great.
Yeah, they're all great.
I agree. Maybe not three. I'm not a big fan of three.
What? Three's good.
You're right. I'm thinking of two. You're right. In their preview gallery, they have Superman 64. From the info we have right now, Superman 64 is a Final Fight-esque action-adventure game.
It's not.
I want to start
fly through rings.
I'm gonna find some IGN article, and I'm gonna change like a Batman Arkham description to like, oh, it's a Final Fight-esque action adventure game.
This is an ad for an accessory. We see a pile of game controllers. It says not cool. Mm-hmm. Thumb control pads, wheels you sit on, designer joysticks. Way cool. The Air Racer optical 3D controller, which looks like a flight, not a flight stick, but like a flight control.
Look at that guy.
Yeah. And then I guess
it looks like kind of like a squid.
I guess it's motion controls because they have six pictures of this dude just flailing his body around in the ground.
I swear to God.
Yeah. Your air moves control the action.
They got one picture of him and they just put him in Photoshop and they just turned him different ways. His legs are bent the same in every picture.
I so badly want to find the photos they didn't use.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
They're so good.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll try to enlarge these photos the best I can and put them on Twitter or something.
I hope this guy's having a great day.
He was during this photo shoot, I think. A preview of Metal Gear Solid. Bond. Solid Snake is back. I love how they say, in case you're not familiar with Metal Gear, here's the story. The original Metal Gear was released in 1987 for the MSX and later made its way to the Famicom, where it was then brought to the United States by Konami for the NES. The game, which was awesome, by the way, starred Solid Snake, an agent on a top-secret mission to destroy a weapon known as Metal Gear, before it was unleashed on the world by an evil tyrant. It spawned an MSX sequel in Japan called Solid Snake, which was a lot better than the sequel that reached the United States, Metal Gear 2, Snake's Revenge for the NES. But the series has been dormant ever since, until now.
That's like a very, for like, we tease these magazines sometimes for just like flubbing facts or like getting things wrong. It's like, that's very, very astute and like very, very.
I could be wrong about this, but aren't those two very wildly different games though? The Nintendo version is not the same as the other one. Like Kojima didn't even work on the Nintendo version.
No, that's Metal Gear 2 is what you're thinking of. Yeah, there were two Metal Gear 2s.
And Got it.
I'd be surprised if the average reader of EGM in 98 had ever heard of the MSX.
I've barely heard of the MSX.
I know.
A preview for Pocket Fighter, which I probably forgot existed, but this is a series I'd very much like to see return. The Cute.
Oh, yeah. I don't know this one.
Yeah, I almost...
I only know the title.
Street Fighter.
That's like, cool. Last year, in the midst of like quarantine depression, I almost bought a Neo Geo Pocket Color. Just to like get Pocket Fighter and a few other games like that.
Yeah. And a preview of Rival Schools, which anytime I get the chance to, my favorite fighting game of all time, and the only one I've ever been good at.
I don't know about that screenshot.
It's in the game. It's in the game.
Okay. What is this Duke Nukem? What was that Duke Nukem ad?
Show us your best impression of Duke Nukem to win this contest.
Oh, okay, all right.
There's a two-page ad for Einhander. This game will be reviewed in this very issue of EGM. Quick preview of Bushido Blade 2, which is coming out to Japan, and they say it's 100% done at this point.
Oh.
And a preview of Brave Fencer Musashi.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that you're a Brave Fencer fan, Mark.
Me too.
Oh, man. Well, I'm Japanese RPGs on PlayStation 1. That was like my jam. Like, that was the first game I played was Final Fantasy 7 on PlayStation. I was like, what? I just tell him to attack, and then it kind of clicked, and then that was it. Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, Brave Fencer Musashi, Parasite Eve. Like, that was like when I became a gamer, was PlayStation 1, you know, Square Enix, really, or Squaresoft at the time.
I like millions of American boys and girls got taken in by the Final Fantasy 7 ad, like the television ad. And it was a big thing, like, oh, it's a game big enough and important enough to be running ads on like primetime TV. And of course, it was nothing but the FMV. And then the game, you know, the game's incredible and like was impressive with the pre-rendered backgrounds. But like the game didn't look anything like that.
The old blocky hands.
Oh boy.
Well, and the thing with Brave Fencer Musashi is it came with a demo for Final Fantasy VIII. So that was kind of like their Trojan horse to be like, hey, play Brave Fencer Musashi because you can try out Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah, like Crackdown with Halo 3.
Or Metroid Prime 2 with a bunch of games.
Bushido Blade is another series I would love to see return. Fighting game with one or two hit kills. Weapons-based fighting game, one or two hit kills. One meaning like you can, if you're gonna hit their arm, they're gonna lose their arm, but one more hit and they're gonna be dead. I just love to see like a realistic take on Japanese sword fighting rendered with today's graphical possibilities.
That'd be cool. It's a good idea for a game.
Well, what's the reaction thing we did with the sword expert? It's like a really realistic sword fighting game with like horrible decapitations and arm severance.
I'm not sure. Sounds like a UK thing.
There was an ultra realistic sword fighting game. Point is, we have a very funny, great reaction from an actual fencer that talks about the styles of fighting in the game, and it's like the game's pretty accurate.
The game,
and then,
it's
and he's surprised at how violent it is. Though he's like, did not expect that head to come off. Then.
Sam, what do you make of this ad? In 1998, an ad for all the Final Fantasy Game Boy games, and all the box art is sporting the Sunsoft logo.
Sunsoft, the box that's on the box too.
Yeah, on each one: Final Fantasy Adventure, Final Fantasy Legend 2, Final Fantasy Legend, and Final Fantasy Legend 3, and they all say Sunsoft.
So this could be related to what the. At the head of this issue, remember how they're talking about Squaresoft's going to like publish their own games now?
Yeah.
I guess there was some other publishing situation. That's not the weirdest thing about this, though. The weirdest thing about this is that one of these games is 10 years old and it's got an ad in a magazine.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like Final Fantasy Legend 3, I think, was the last of these, and that came out in like 92 or 93. That's insane. Mm.
The copy says, so you thought that you had rid the world of evil monsters, dark knights, vicious overlords, and devils. Well, guess what? They're back, and this time they're coming at you all at once. So maybe they're being re-released.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Final Fantasy Legend was my first ever RPG. And that's how I got into RPGs, was playing that. And I got 2 and 3 and was obsessed with them. And then I got Final Fantasy on NES.
My first RPG is that's a good topic for discussion. I had a similar journey as Mark where I like didn't understand what was going on. I'm like, what do you mean I can't just hit a button and attack?
Mine might have been flipped. I might have had the NES one first, but I got those at basically the same time because they're around at the same time. And that was true. The fighting was confusing, but what was really confusing to me was equipment. I was like, I bought the sword. Why am I not stronger now? And I was just getting my ass handed to me by imps in the forest outside of the first castle. And I didn't realize I was like naked and without any weapons because you have to equip everything.
Yeah.
But back then, it's much harder to tell which what characters can use which weapons and whether or not
exactly.
A new weapon is going to be an improvement or not.
It's much
more vague.
And it's like some games, they visually show you know, upgrades and armor and weapons and stuff like that, but it's like not all of them. Like Final Fantasy, they just show the weapon. Like your character always looks the same.
But the gear always looks the same.
Yeah.
Another quick preview from Thrill Kill, which is a game I mentioned before, a game that was finished. It was a four-based fighter that was the only selling point is that it was very, very graphically violent for the time. It was scrapped before it was ever released, but I had a bootleg copy of it that I was very proud of back in the day. Wow. And then Silhouette Mirage was a game I'd completely forgotten about, but I totally had on PlayStation. It was a run-and-gun 2D platformer with really cool animation. And it was published by Working Designs, which at the time was they were just like the leading publisher for bringing over Japanese games in really good packages.
Is it left or right?
Yeah. It's like Gunstar Heroes.
I mean, it's treasure. It's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Silhouette Mirage rules. And I had the same reaction as you just seeing that.
I haven't thought of it in a long, long time. Another weird peripheral, like goofy peripherals, gimmick peripherals must have been so big. This one's called the Video Game Control Glove.
Mm.
And I think, Sam, we've watched like an old like infomercial about how this thing works.
Yeah, we did.
Back in the day. But like based on this ad, you have no idea why you might want to buy this controller and how it might benefit you.
I can't even tell what the glove is, I'll be honest with you. It looks transparent. I don't get it.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out this ad, an ad for Aero Fighters Assault. Aero Fighters is an old arcade, you know, shoot 'em up series, that which is top down and vertical. I guess there is a 3D version that came to N64 in the 90s that's more of a flight sim.
I also I want to point out that in their print ad they have a quote from bird.taponline.com.
yep, bird.taponline. Yes,
you can just do whatever you wanted back then.
No IGN.
No, I always again. That's how I spotted bird.taponline, because I always scan these ads to see if there's an early IGN quote or not.
There's a quote from Q64 that says, "This game is one of those evergreen titles that will hang around the system forever." I don't know if that's Aero Fighters Assault.
Well, all right.
You may remember a few of these issues ago that we looked at. There was a game called Fishing to Bassing. And here's another one, a preview for a game called Get Bass, which I think is Sega's Bass Fishing as it was released here, but shows up in this magazine as Get Bass.
Yeah, well,
I have a real soft spot for fishing RPGs.
Yeah.
One just came out on the Switch that I might buy.
This one's an arcade game, so I don't know how many arcade or RPG elements there would have been there. An ad for ZDTV, your computer channel, Ziff Davis TV. The most entertaining display of technology since the Bug Zapper, it says. And the small print says, what's that?
Well, you can really tell how entertaining it is by this ad.
Yeah, I know. Introducing ZDTV, the cable channel devoted exclusively to computing and the internet. A tantalizing blue light on the front porch of cable television. Tune in for shows like Call for Help and Really Get Connected to Your Computer, or explore the best of the web on Internet Tonight.
I think this is what you might call a house ad, because EGM was published by the previous incarnation of Ziff Davis, which is different than the one that
it was.
Owner of IGN now.
Internet Tonight is a really good name for something in 2021.
It is, and I think we probably can use it since we're owned by Ziff Davis. So
yeah, but there was that weird corporate divorce where like the cover of this magazine is like their website was videogames.com, which is, you know, GameSpot owns that now. So like there was some split between IGN Ziff Davis and then the other ZD stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we should try to do something with Internet Tonight.
But we have a show called Review Crew.
We do. I'm just going to
point that out.
We're looking at right here, Review Crew. And
John Davison's on there.
You might see a familiar face on this page. That's right. In this issue, they review 1080p snowboarding. You give it a 9.5 at the high end and a 7.5 on the low end. I thought that game had the best looking snow I'd ever seen in the game at that time. They also review AGH Atari Collection 2. Sam, what do you think AGH is for? Arcade Game Heroes?
Atari Game Hits?
Atari Game Hits, Atari Collection 2.
Yeah.
They thought it was okay.
I have no idea.
It got sevens and sixes. They review Blasto, the Phil Hartman game, the 3D platformer.
Yeah.
Got a 5 on the low end, 7.5 on the high end.
What the Death Trap Dungeon? What are they doing? That game's great.
Well, maybe is it better on PC? because it got a 3.5 on the low end.
Ah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't venture into this gloomy and frustrating Tomb Raider wannabe. That's what they said.
So Justin, I can get you in touch with the guy who gave it a 5.0.
Yeah, I know
him.
But Einhander, my man, Einhander got all nines, straight nines.
Oh, look at that.
Nice.
That's pretty, well, this is the era where I was collecting and obsessively reading EGM every single month. Like, this is when, like, I was forming my identity as, like, video games are my thing. And, like, it's pretty bold. Like, they have good taste, or I feel like it informed my taste of, like, you know, the game getting a 9.5 is Einhander. It's not like, you know, Madden or whatever. Like, that's pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah, even though it's rendered in 3D, it's still an old school, like, arcade style game.
Yeah.
Hotshots Golf got 8s and a 7, which I'm a little bit surprised by that. Pitfall 3D, a game I've never played, but John Davison gave it a 2.0.
Saying it's utterly
irritating. It's not big or clever. It's cheap and horrible, and I bloody well hate it. I could just hear him saying that, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, but then someone else gave it a 7. That's wild.
Then Kelly said, I really enjoyed this game.
There's some very, very bad games reviewed in this magazine.
Yeah.
I love it.
Stuff I've never heard of. Rascal on PlayStation. Got fours and threes. San Francisco Rush on PlayStation, PS1, got 5s and 4s. And I always thought the IGN, old school IGN crew loved that game, but maybe it was N64 version.
Yeah. Maybe.
And also the arcade machine, right? We have an
arcade. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, yeah. That's maybe.
Look at Tekken 3, though.
Tekken 3, man. 3 10s and a 9.
Tekken 3 was the turning point for that series. That game is dramatically different than Tekken 2. That game is amazing.
So now, that series. Knowing what I know now that, and I apologize for all the kids listening to the show, but Sushi X is not real. He doesn't exist. So the three human beings that actually exist gave the game a 10. Mm-hmm. And then Sushi X, in air quotes, gave it a 9.
What? So they were just
what's that about?
Yeah.
We don't think we should give this one 4 10s.
Do you think that's what it's about? Like the pantheon of like, okay, we all really, really love it, but we don't want to give it the perfect 40?
Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe. There's someone we can ask about that.
That's true.
No.
They reviewed 3 Game Boy games. Bomberman Game Boy, Legend of the River King, speaking of fishing RPGs, although that got 4s in it too, and Mystical Ninja.
Mm.
Sam, can you believe Mystical Ninja, which that's got like a 3s and a 5.
A port of the SNES game or something related to Legend of the Mystical Ninja?
I think it was probably a port of a Famicom game from many, many years before this. But John Davidson said, run from room to room, slapping bad guys, picking up objects, and occasionally popping into a shop to replenish health or weapons. Whoa, careful. Any more excitement and I might fall off my chair.
But that sounds great.
Editor's Picks of the Month, June 1998. Their top 10 in reverse order, starting at number 10, was Wario Land 2, then GoldenEye 007, World Cup 98, Need for Speed 3, Breath of Fire 3, Hot Shots Golf, 1080p, Snowboarding, Einhander, Panzer Dragoon Saga, and Tekken 3.
I really love, I wish, like, I got, maybe I can lobby Sam, we can get together a group and bring something like this back for IGN, where it's like, completely context free.
Yep.
just the picks of the month. And like, you know, it'll be Mass Effect this month, and then next month that'll drop down to number 5 off the charts. Like it'll be replaced with something else. Like
off the charts.
It's so funny. GoldenEye's great, but you know, it's a little below Hot Shots Golf.
No, but like
Tekken 3.
I actually really respect it of like, you know, something like Dota or like whatever could hang around like the number 10 spot forever, like till the end of time. Yeah. Like it's great.
When all these games got EGM silver and gold awards, except World Cup 98, but it's on the list.
No. Yeah, it's what they were all about that month. I love it.
Yeah.
And then their gaming moment of that month was Red Eyes, Achy Hands, 6 cases worth of empty beer beverage cans, all were the result of 48 hours of straight Iron Fist mayhem after the review guys got their hands on the first beta of Tekken 3. You think they really played it for 48 hours? I don't know if I believe it.
No.
Okay. No. Finally, the final word, little opinion piece is, enough with the kid stuff, Nintendo.
Yeah, I remember this era.
Yeah, it never ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just remember the dissing on it. It was like constant. It was like Nintendo's a kid's system. Blah, blah, blah.
And then Nintendo
started with Sega, kept going.
And then Nintendo, circa 2003 to 2005, they went really edgy and like leaned into it, and then eventually sort of found their identity, I think.
There's one more thing from that issue I wanted to point out. There's a letter in the beginning that I forgot to mention. It just says, here comes a new challenger. And someone wrote in saying, my classmates and I would like to respond to your closing remarks in the April editorial where you said creating a new and innovative game. Anyone out there up to the challenge? I'd just like to say yes. And that came from Neville Stevens, who is a student game developer at Red River Community College. But he doesn't say anything. He just says yes. That's him answering their questions. And EGM's response was, okay, we'll keep an eye out for you.
Did you look him up? I want to look him up on like Moby Games now. See if
he went on to make Halo.
No, but ladies and gentlemen, I did locate Neville Stevens.
Oh boy.
Formerly of Red River College.
What's he up to?
A certificate in interactive game design in 1999. And he's currently a production coordinator at Tangent Animation.
I love it.
I'm not sure what they do, but maybe they work on video games, and I hope so.
That counts. It's close enough.
Yep. Counts as close enough.
That's amazing.
And that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Sean S. We're going to try to make this a lightning round, so let the question begin.
Did it come out before January 1st, 1990?
No.
Is this a 90s game?
No.
Yikes.
Did this... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Nope.
Okay. Did this come out between 2010... Wait, hold on. 2000 and 2010.
Yes.
was this an action game, an RPG, or a shooter?
What?
Yes.
Is that legal?
Yeah.
I've been off a little too long. changing the rules here.
You can do whatever. There are no rules.
Apparently.
One of three.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. So I was so baffled.
Action RPG or as an action game, an RPG game, or a shooter.
And it's 2000 to 2010. Okay. Is it an RPG?
No.
Well,
all right. Yikes. So is it a shooter?
Yes.
Easy. Let's nail this down. It's Halo.
First person?
Yes.
Oof.
When it came out, when was it exclusive to a console?
When it was released.
Okay, and then eventually, okay.
Is multiplayer online a major component of this game?
No.
I'm thinking Halo.
Yeah.
Multiplayer online was not a major component of the game?
Not the first Halo.
Not Halo 1. Halo 2 was like the big introduction. Xbox Live didn't exist yet.
It wasn't.
Oh, because you're saying LAN doesn't... I see what you're saying, yeah.
Right. Okay, so was this originally launched on an Xbox console?
Yes, that's 10.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it.
Is this the first game in a series?
Yes.
Does it star Master Chief?
No.
What?
I'm so glad I did that.
Oh, he changed it at the last minute. So it's an Xbox first-person shooter that doesn't star the Master Chief?
Are there Ubisoft shooters?
It could be Perfect Dark Zero.
Could be. Well, no, first in a series. Come on now.
That's for Xbox 360. Do we know which?
That's also true.
We only know an Xbox console.
That's is this an true. Xbox 360 game?
Yes.
Okay, so it could be perfect. No, because that's
so right, okay. Let me hit the reset button here. First person shooter, Xbox 360, first in a series, doesn't focus on online multiplayer. Okay, so there's Fear.
Yep.
There's
Condemned, Criminal Origins.
There's Condemned. There's one that just flashed into my mind and now it's gone.
BioShock.
Oh, it might be BioShock. Wait, was that exclusive? It wasn't day and date with PS3?
Yeah, it was exclusive to the Xbox 360 when
it
came out.
I don't recall that specifically, but the PS3 was going through some tough times in that era, so a lot of stuff, like the original Mass Effect was like Xbox.
I would believe it either way.
This is Lightning, so have we mentioned this game yet?
Yes.
Okay, it might be BioShock. Okay, so...
Does it take place underwater?
Yes.
Is it BioShock? Oh,
okay. It's BioShock.
Woo! Yay! There it is.
Nicely job. 2007. Cool. I think it came a year later to PlayStation 3.
That sounds about right.
I was hoping you weren't going to be tripped up on the first person shooter thing.
Right. Boy, yeah.
I love the original BioShock so much.
I'm interested in playing it again.
You would think the genre hack would be too good, but it's not because we didn't get that game whose name I still can't remember from last week that we've mentioned several times in this episode.
Ray Fencer Musashi.
Thank you for the suggestion, Sean S. If listeners and viewers have their own suggestions for 20 questions, email them to me at the email address gamescoop@ign.com. And that's all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you to Sam. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Mark. Thank you to Nick working behind the scenes, making this show happen. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop, and we're out.
Stranger, I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.